SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and thanks to Doug O'Neill for the visit and a couple of interesting little tidbits there. I mean, I knew Wild Man Jack was going to go to Dubai, but ambivalent for the UAE Derby. So there was something we didn't have, and somebody else is going to, I imagine, going to Dubai, Nick Luck, and he joins us now. Nick, good afternoon.
Hi, Steve. I don't think I'm going to be in Dubai. Not if it is still on the list of prohibited countries for the UK. I mean, if you go to Dubai at the moment, you have to come back and stay in a hotel for 10 days. So I think that could be off the menu.
Well, I'm sure that you'll at least bring plenty of insight and coverage leading up and through it. I'm sorry I made that suggestion. Nick, right now, dominating the storylines and your show as well. I don't even know how to describe it, just a horrific incident involving Gordon Elliott. And as you said, I think either this morning or yesterday, the fury and the reactions to it and the fallout continue an hour-to-hour basis.
Yeah, I think this is certainly one of the strangest and sort of most oddly distressing stories that I can remember in racing. No one really is suggesting from within the sport that Gordon Elliott's standards of welfare and how he keeps his horses on a day-to-day basis are anything other than as we'd expect and pretty exemplary. But, you know, whatever the context, an image of one of the world's leading jumps trainers astride a horse that had died on his gallops and appearing to pose in jocular fashion for the camera while doing it, it's clearly deeply shocking and extremely strange. So, it's unsurprising that it's provoked a really significant and visceral reaction from a huge, huge swathe of the racing community. And, you know, the fact that I'm talking to you now, not just nationally, but globally. And really, really, I think people feel let down that special contract or license that racing has with the wider community has been so badly undermined. You know, we all understand that racing operates under a social license, and that our duty of care is under scrutiny at all times and ever more so as the world evolves and changes and gets further away from being a rural community. And I think people just feel deeply let down by this image, even if it was a one-off and something that was spur of the moment, and I'm perfectly happy, and I think everyone's reasonably satisfied to accept the sincerity of Gordon's apology. But it doesn't, unfortunately, lessen the impact of this, and the impact has been extraordinarily sizable.
You and I have had a tangential discussion, going back the spring 2 years ago, and you were, you were exceedingly eloquent as usual about the condemnation of the sport. You juxtaposed PETA activities with the here that we were dealing with at the time, in particular involving Santa Anita. You juxtaposed it with the critique of the Grand National, and with Cheltenham just ahead, there's already an acute focus on chasing and you know, particularly the Grand National, where there is a propensity for horses to, you know, to be injured and, you know, fatally injured. This just feels like ammunition, you know, for those that are already predisposed to thinking a certain way about the sport.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I think the proximity of those two major spring festivals has only served to heighten the unease surrounding this. Now, our judgment of it shouldn't be affected by timing, and the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board have made the point that their investigation, whilst they and all parties will be keen to expedite it as much as they possibly can, you know, they cannot expedite their investigation extraordinarily on the basis that Cheltenham and Aintree are around the corner. But clearly, that heightens the focus on those two events, and it increases the anxiety of the relevant authorities. And I think it's to that end that the British Horse Racing Authority, even though they don't have the direct responsibility for policing this case, because it's taken place in Ireland, they have taken the unusual step of acting unilaterally and have suspended all entries from Gordon Elliott Stable until the IHRB has reached their conclusion, which is quite an unusual thing to do, but it sends out quite a strong statement, and I think it's probably a statement that was necessary given the mainstream media attention on this case in Great Britain. And given Elliott's own prolific success at Cheltenham, and of course with the most famous Grand National horse of recent times in Tiger Roll, a dual winner, and a horse who only this morning was withdrawn from the race, with his owner saying that he'd been allotted too much weight from the handicap. But it's rather sad that the withdrawal of a history-making dual Grand National hero should now be no more than a footnote to today's news.
In addition to that, there's also now, you know, the IHRB you mentioned, the Ireland body, the video that, you know, followed up the still photograph, and suppose that we should include. I haven't had a chance to read it because I've been on the air, but I did see the alert regarding Shirley Park and withdrawing horses from Elliott's yard.
Yeah, so if you're trying to put together any kind of a broadcast at the moment, somebody described it to me this morning, it's a bit like trying to nail jelly to a wall. It's almost impossible to pin it down because it's moving so fast. So just from last night, the timeline was Elliott's second apology around about 7 o'clock last night, which was a much fuller, more heartfelt apology, and one that resonated much more authentically than the original one, which was an attempt to contextualize, but was really a bit of a fudge, and I think did him more harm than good. Whoever advised him on that didn't do a very good job, I don't think. Then we had a statement from the British Horse Racing Authority saying they were suspending entry, which was a big story in itself. Then this morning we had the video of the amateur rider, Rob James, in a similar position, getting on the back of a horse who was already dead. That apparently had emerged from 4 or 5 years ago, and James himself has now issued his own apology. Then we had the IHRB giving us the detail that Gordon Elliott's inquiry was to be heard this Friday, so reasonably expeditiously. And then we had the news of Cheveley Park Stars, who everyone around the world will be familiar with, their red, white, blue silks and Breeders' Cup winning owners and so forth. In years, they've branched quite heavily into jump racing with high-profile, big-money boutique purchases spread between Gordon Elliott, William Mullins, Henry de Bromhead, and others. And they would be removing all their horses from Gordon Elliott's stable. Amongst those, one of the most exciting jumpers in training in Europe, a horse called Envoi Allen, who is unbeaten in 10 or 11 starts. We'll take all the week at the Cheltenham Festival. He's off to Henry de Bromhead. So it's been a very, very fast-moving story. And that's a big blow for Gordon Elliott. Whatever happens now, you know, if as is expected, his license is suspended or taken away, there would also be a reasonable expectation that there may be a new license holder within that stable. The fact that, you know, upwards of 15, 20 horses may have left that stable is going to be a significant blow. And who knows how that'll unfold.
I reached out to Nick early this morning, knowing that, you know, we'd certainly were going to address it today, that I reached out to Bill Gallo from National Steeplechase, and while they have not convened themselves, Bill acknowledged that they would, you know, they would uphold any ban handed down from an, you know, from an international authority like the BHA and the IHRB.
Yeah, and that is the normal, that's the normal process, isn't it? There's normally, you know, an understood reciprocity between these authorities that if a ban is given, then it, then it's upheld in the other country. You know, we've seen that for much more mundane and rudimentary things in the past, and you'd expect that to be the case here. Yeah. It's interesting that the penalty is interesting, because you sort of, when it comes to this, you sort of have to have a sense of proportionality as well. And understandably, because the impact has been so seismic, there are people, particularly on social media, calling for a lifetime ban, and I can understand people's fury and anger and real visceral upset. But having said that, if you break it down and isolate the single offence in and of itself, it's hard to imagine that if there is a suspension, which most people believe there will be, it's going to be one that is going to be very, very long. I'm not even going to speculate as to how long it might be. But just to give context, people have been suspended for, you know, egregious examples of neglect and borderline cruelty, and have received, you know, 3 or 4 year suspensions. Now, if you're going to be proportional about it, this isn't on that scale, because crass and callous though this might have been, it's not an example of that. So when people say he's completely finished and completely ruined, I venture to suggest that might not necessarily be the case. But clearly there are, you know, significant lessons that are going to have to be learned if they haven't already.
I know that the National Trainers Federation, they came out, you know, very strongly from a contemporary standpoint, and I've seen, you know, I've seen certain, you know, plenty of horsemen weigh in from over here as well. You know, I hate using a term like black eye. That's so mundane in the scheme of things, when, you know, there are already so many horsemen involved, Nick, in having to defend themselves and you know, their livelihoods, you know, so to have this, you know, thrown at them and you know, they essentially, you know, people trying to, you know, paint a broad brush of you know, horsemen worldwide, that's what makes this so egregious.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think that reaction from to the huge swain of those within the industry was really significant yesterday. You know, often when there's a disciplinary action against the practitioner in the sport, the other practitioners will tend to rally round. In this case, it was noticeable that very few of them did, and they really sought to preserve the reputation of the industry first. And I think that was quite a telling sign, really, of what they thought of it. Because if there was any sense that, I think what upset people was that it might be perceived that this was in some way normal or could be normalised. That it wasn't that big a deal. And I think, you know, they sought to reassure people that they believed it was absolutely not kind of normal or right thing to do, and that it was a something that was aberrant. Obviously, with the emergence of another video this morning, that's going to be harder to convince people. But, you know, and who knows, the rumours have found that there could be more to come. But I think there have been some strong, sensible messages sent out by a lot of very responsible people in the horse racing community, and that really is all that can be expected of them at the moment.
Well, I see MPs making statements and cabinet ministers making, you know, when you reach that level, this is, you know, this is a problem of just, you know, indescribable.
Well, it's not as if, level. It's not as if we're in a, it's not as if we're in a slow news.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I started to think of this. It's not a bad thing to think about. It's getting an extraordinary amount of attention as it is. You know, understandably, it's a perfect storm, isn't it? It is a deeply shocking image that has lit a very significant flame, and that flame will be intensely oxygenated by the way in which social media works. I mean, this would have been a big story if a photograph had come out pre-social media, but obviously it's almost the perfect negative story for a social media generation and in terms of exposure. And yeah, it's just very sad, really. And
I feel that.
You know, I feel a degree of sadness for a lot of the people
who work
within that stable,
whose lives are going to be turned upside down,
and who have absolutely no part or no culpability in this. You know, if you think of the guys and women who looked after a horse like Envoy Allen, or one of those superstar horses at Elliott's that, you know, has been looked after absolutely beautiful and sitting there munching away at it in its manger last night, and is now on a horse box to another trainer not because the trainer has trained it badly, but because of an historic misdemeanor on the part of their boss. It's going to be pretty galling if you're the person that's used to riding that horse out every morning and was looking forward to taking it to Cheltenham. So, yeah, there's a lot of people here
who warrant a
thought, at least, who might not get too many
over the next few weeks.
Really, it's just, and also, if you look at the journey of the trainer himself, he's a completely self-made guy. You know, he's come from absolutely nothing, and through sheer hard work, enterprise, and ability, he's turned himself into an absolute force. Not just someone right at the top of the trainer's table, vying with Willie Mullins for however many championships, but you know, someone who's built a real behemoth of an operation, employing a massive workforce, investing a huge amount of money to build it up.
So, to that end, it's really a very sad tale. Oh. You know, inside out, back to front, you know, whichever way
you look at it.
So, you just got to hope that the sport can find the right way to communicate what it does well and maintain its place in people's affections. And Gordon Elliott can find a way of
pushing through whatever justifiable punishment is handed down to him, and you know, eventually this becomes
starts to recede in people's minds.
And I'm glad you brought up the personal side of this with him. And he's been on the show with us one time after jury duty won the Grand National at Far Hills. And, you know, he's been sending, you know, he's been sending horses over, you know, for the big prizes, you know, particularly Far Hills with, you know, the work that, you know, that's been done to, you know, increase the, you know, the international interest in the event, and of course last year canceled, but there does feel to some degree, Nick, that he's not necessarily the easiest guy to defend, and that's a mitigating factor here as well.
I don't know that I'd necessarily concur on that, Steve. I think in situations like this, you know, I think it's your kind of duty, really, to recognize all the achievements and good points of the person in question, whilst at the same time being able to condemn the act.
The podcast that I conducted yesterday, the Hislop and I were, I thought, you know,
without being
hysterical in any way, we condemned the act in the strongest possible terms and tried to send out the same message that our governing body ultimately sent out later in the day. But having said that, you try not to kind of conflate that with your prejudices as regards the person as a human being, don't you? So
there's a lot of
sideshow stuff around this case
that's doing the rounds.
You'll have seen it. People will have seen it on social media. Lots of speculation, lots of rumor, that there's more to come. All sorts of insinuation about what has or hasn't been happening around the stable. I think sometimes it's best to, in these cases, just to try and park as much of that as you possibly can and deal with the matter at hand.
Well, I wouldn't say. It's the only story, but it certainly has dominated here these last several days, and we'll continue to follow it. When I see that the American news services circulating the story and putting it on it on Yahoo, and it's on there's a link I see somebody just posted it for the story at CNN, and it's obviously going to land here and provide plenty of fodder for those that that want to paint the industry in as bad a light as possible.
It's got that
element about it, hasn't it, Steve? That it's sufficiently unusual. Not only is it shocking, but it's sufficiently unusual that it's going to make a story, and people can then appropriate it however they so choose. And going back to exactly where we started this conversation, I think really that is where the heart of the disappointment lies. It's the fact that any people in the sport sensitive to the outside world who have an appreciation of the sport's place in the outside world understands that there are certain kind of responsibilities to uphold the sport's image and its integrity. So that's why people are pretty disappointed, I think. But listen, we'll have to see what happens between now and the end of the week. I get the feeling that I could get home now and find that the story has evolved or has gone through another few revolutions since I started this phone call.
Let's leave on a cheerier note, and I did couch this as coming within eyeshot of Cheltenham, which starts 2 weeks from today, and I see that you're already promoting some of the some of the Q&As and some of the Cheltenham Festival lead up, Nick, in coming 10 days.
Yeah, well, if it wasn't a strange enough festival already, which is going to be with no crowd and behind closed doors, it'll be even stranger now, sure. And For one, taken the focus off all these interminable preview evenings, which we're still going to get, but you bet your bottom dollar you know what questions 1, 2, and 3 are going to be. So stand by. But listen, the anticipation for this event is always one of the most enjoyable things about the racing year if you live here, and I know that the festival has a niche but significant following in the US as well. And what we are lacking in terms of atmosphere on the track this year, I think we could certainly hope to make up for in terms of not only storylines but quality of the horses operating, because to my eye, and many people might not agree, but to my eye, the quality of jumps horses in Ireland and the UK is extremely high.
Real potential superstars to look forward to. So, roll on 2 weeks, guys.
Hopefully,
weather stays fair after what's been a pretty rough and wet winter here. It's just starting to become a bit more spring-like, and if we get this until the festival, then we've got lots to look forward to.
Well, Nick, I thank you for the, you know, for the insights and the update on the Gordon Elliott story, and we'll look forward maybe late next week to a proper Cheltenham preview.
Yeah, fingers crossed, Steve, and of course, thank you.
Nick Luck, everybody, and of course, Nick's daily weekday podcast show, and certainly on a regular basis, just an outstanding resource for international racing news and coverage. And Nick, second to none, as we've said for forever. And I wanted to get his always thoughtful insight against this backdrop, which is just a mess. I mean, there's no other way to frame it. So, Nick Luck. And I'll send the link for Nick's show if you haven't tuned in. And he's had a nice parade of guests. And we absolutely will get Cheltenham pushes in. We'll get the long shot lad, Kev Humphreys. We'll get this is Cheltenham is one of his favorites, along with Ascot and other, you know, international stands. So we'll get look forward to. Of course, you know, Kev's over and working in Singapore now, but still, it doesn't stop him from getting together his opinions for the big events. So we'll get, I promise, Kev, as well as Nick, when it comes to approaching Cheltenham. Cheltenham starts on the 16th, 2 weeks from today, and goes to the 19th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th. Thanks to Nick for the for the visit. We're going to close out the morning with Papo, with Papo Morales, and we'll look at some results through the form to win lens. And I've got to pull up a couple of screen captures. I should put these on. I want to put these up for you as well, so that you can see specifically the spots that we're going to talk about. Papo Morales joins us from AmWager. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing today?
Excellent. I thought that we needed to not just preview some races, but to come back and you know, use the, you know, the information and the way in which the form to win analysis, the way it manages to just keep identifying horses. And I was thinking to myself, Papo, about how do we explain the fact that a horse like Cole Bodemeister, you know, a 52-1 shot, that when you looked at the PPs, just the regular PPs, I had the benefit of Thoroughgraph, which I use. And even you fold in the workout reports, and really, I looked at maybe three or four different resources in retrospect, going back to see, you know, how does a horse like this win that race? And the thing that to me was most amazing was that, you know, the form to win analysis had her as the second, you know, essentially in a couple of different formats, either second or third best in that race. And so, you know, it's not like she was a marginal candidate. And I can't even explain necessarily how the system, how the algorithm computes her speed and her, you know, her running, you know, her splits, but it's evaluating how fast a horse is, and it managed to identify her. It's pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, Steve, it was. I'm in the same boat as you, Steve. I was trying to get creative. We talked about this race last week, where, you know, where a lot of people were going with VQuist, you could just, it seemed like an opportunity that was just right to have a crazy horse. And I landed on competitive speed, you know, finished third, but that wasn't going to get it done for the multis. And it was literally right in front of me, both when I did my own filter, you know, evaluating the race from 7 furlongs to 8. And she was third, and VQuist was second. And it was, you know what they say, well, I don't know if you've heard this, but I always say this, you know, the eyes are really useless when the mind is blind. And in that case, it was literally right in front of me, and it was a missed opportunity on that part. Because, you know, the form to win speed, I mean, I give it more weight personally than the average equibase figure. It's like, if it's a dual qualifier and they both fit top three on both, then it's a horse that I always use. She wasn't the fastest on the average equibase, but she fit definitely on form to win. So, you know, if you used it, what was right in front of you, you could have capitalized. Unfortunately, for that particular race, I did not.
I want you to lay out again, and I'm typing in to put this screen capture up, and explain again the, you know, the catalog, or the, you know, the category that we're talking about, because there's, you know, the form to win best, the form to win average, then the worst, and then the three categories for equibase under the same three scenarios: average, best, and worst. And you can, by clicking on each of those headings, you know, the list will reorient from top to bottom. And so, you know, you can look at the, you know, at as many of these as you want, or as you've been doing, kind of comparing an equibase evaluation in terms of their numeric value to the form to win computation, which is obviously internal and is taking all of the races, you know, together to create the form to win number. Explain that process again, and which of the two categories, so that people, when they look at this on the screen, they can visualize it if they haven't yet downloaded the app and gone to the website.
Yeah, sure. So when you open the app, the first thing that you want to do is just click the Analyze tab, and then it's going to show you all the different sorts of headings, from best form to win, average form to win, worst, average equibase, best equibase, and worst equibase. And actually, if some of those are not important to you, which I don't particularly care for the worst figure, you can take those out. You can just, so you never have to see them again. There's a tab on form to win at the bottom where you can order your columns, order and sort them, or take things out. So I go in and I automatically take out the best and worst. But I'm more concerned with average, because I want to, you know, any horse can pop up at one point and run a big number, but I want to look at horses that show consistency. So I just take those out. So then I'm only looking at the average form to win time and the average equibase time. And if you click on each tab, Steve, you know, it sorts it from highest to lowest or lowest to highest. Well, in case of the average equibase, obviously the higher number is the better. However, when you're comparing the form to win time, that is a time, so you want to sort those from lowest to highest. And what it does is it orders every horse, and you see every horse stacked up next to each other in the order of preference. So it's just an easy way to evaluate, you know, the fastest horses, all their data consumed in the PTs on one screen.
I just tweeted it out, and if you take a look, Papa, you can see it. You can see it here, and I've been looking on my phone, which, you know, so I'm obviously a little tinier. So if people pull it up, or if you're listening to the replay, or, you know, listening yourself later by, you know, podcast or on the archive, pull this screen up, and you'll get a much clearer picture. And it's really stunning. The form to win average had Vequist on top, and then Crazy Beautiful, then Whole Bodemeister, and then Competitive Speed. So essentially, it lays out the triple that was, I mean, I've got it here. I mean, the triple was ridiculous, of course. You mentioned Crazy Beautiful. I mean, she was a big number herself. She was higher priced than Whole Bodemeister.
Yeah, and I think, and what scared me away was from Crazy Beautiful was just the lack of words coming in off the layoff. But McPeak had it ready. And, yeah, she did go off at a price also.
Here it is, yeah. 53-1 for Whole Bodemeister pays 107.60. Crazy Beautiful actually was 9-1, which that surprised me. Curlin's Catch managed to take more money. I mean, I expected Milfay to be second choice. I mean, she seemed like the one to reach for to beat Vequist if you were looking for an alternative likely, and then start playing with the prices. But this number here it is, the exact at 572.60. The 50-cent try was $2,531. The 10-cent super was $14,000. You had the 84-1 shot, actually, Penn Street, who did not show up as a contender. So you needed to find Penn Street some other way, I guess. the triple, basically for a buck, a $5,000 try here. I mean, just unbelievable. And it's right there on the screen. And I do this. I mean, I sort them by average. And I just, I don't know, I personally refuse to believe it, essentially.
Yeah, it happens far too often. I mean, that's the thing that's a little bit unique about the app. It is strictly, like, it doesn't take anything into account about, how the horse is coming in. It's not going to factor in workouts.
Right.
I mean, you can factor it in yourself. All it is, especially the point when it's the speed derivative, so it's just going to lay it out black and white. Now, whether the horses run to that, I mean, it's showing you, based on their history, where they're at coming into this race. And, then you can factor in, the workout things and, bad trips and everything. But in terms of the raw data, it's showing you technically who's fastest, depending on how you set up your filters.
And you just wouldn't have, if you look at, you mentioned the Equibase portion, you can see that Whole Bodemeister was not as attractive on the Equibase ratings. But again, whatever the algorithm, and at some point we'll get Alex on or some of the engineers to explain how they did this, because I think they're probably, in the overall equation, Papo, they probably would be interesting to hear from, because they were not horse racing people. So they came to this strictly from a mathematic standpoint, and whether they're involving, regression analysis and, the elements of the arcs of speed in a race and the diminishing speed and those kinds of things. When they built this, they had no preconceived notion about the game, and that probably that purity probably contributes to this kind of apparent indice. I mean, to find a horse like this.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you, Alex. I met Alex and the team. They've been here to Louisville to visit, and they know nothing about racing. They programmers and statistical guys. And then, Alex has had the great idea of working with us to present the data in a different way, which, I think is okay. For some people, traditional PPs are the way to go, and I still like looking at traditional PPs myself, but the form to win is just a different way of looking at things. And in an industry that's sometimes not ready to jump on to change or to try new things, I think this is a real opportunity.
I'll put up another screen capture from Friday night as well, because the 15-1 winner of the Cincinnati Trophy, she was second best. Wait for Nairobi was second best on form to win on average.
Yeah, and actually the form to win did help me out on Saturday and kind of saved the day, was that race 10, which was an 8.5 furlong, like high allowance optional claiming on the turf. I just bet the triple, as form to win said, and it had Psy Up over Malibu Moon and Blameless. And that ended up paying, I think, 212 for 50 cents. So, there's opportunities to be had using this product. And sometimes I will say you kind of got to go against what your mind's telling you, because you're saying, oh, this horse is just not ready. But, you know, throw them on there. You just never know. Opportunities like that don't come each and every day. I remember a couple years ago there was a horse called, I think it was El Tormenta, who won the Woodbine. Yeah,
sure,
so
sure.
I love that horse. And I was, you know, sometimes get nervous. People aren't mentioning a horse throughout the week. And I stuck to my guns on that horse and didn't get tricky, just bet him strictly to win. And I think sometimes you got to, you know, you can take in a lot of noise, both on social media and just talking to your friends and everything. But if you find an angle and you find something, I would say if the price doesn't... isn't right, you know, in terms of the odds are a lot higher than you expected. I mean, that's really the opportunity to jump on board. And I think sometimes that scares players away, including myself, like, oh, what am I missing? You know, this horse is way too high. It's really pulling on the board. But those are the opportunities to really cash.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Cy-F race. That was on the grass going along. The other races we've talked about, you had the sprint in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Trophy at Turfway, and the one-turn mile when it came to the Devona Dale. I'm gravitating, as I learn to use it and as I, you know, and as I'm including it and including horses with it, I've been leaning on the dirt and for the most part. And you know, we've tried to express that this is not yet, it's not something that can help with maiden races with horses, essentially, that, you know, when you've got unraced horses, there's obviously nothing to go on. So it's not necessarily going to waltz you through every single card and every single race. There's areas, and I think as people utilize it, they're going to find, their comfort zones and sweet spots as they play with it. And, you know, we talk about the analyzer and, you know, hitting the button to make adjustments on the distance, for instance, and, you know, keeping the parameter on a sprint from 5.5, let's say, to 6.5, or, you know, you could just use 6 furlongs. When people download it, Papo, there's been some presets that have been included so that, there's those ranges or have been assigned, but as you get familiar with it, you can adjust those yourself. But, if you just want to, hit analyze and go with what the system has already created, that's fine too.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the more you play around with it, the more comfortable that you'll get. I mean, we all have different angles that we like to use. You'll find certain angles at certain racetracks, you know, that tend to play towards, you know, front runners and speed, and you can adjust your furlongs either a half or more or plus one or minus one. So it is something that you have to play around with, but you do have, when you do sign up and download the app, you know, you do have the last 2 days for every track that's run, the results. So you can go around there and try different filters and see if you would have landed on the winner. And then I actually spoke with Alex this morning, and the team is going to be pushing the new update to the iTunes Store and Google Play here by the end of the week. So we're going to start offering two free races a day. So not only are you getting, you know, all the past results, but also you can play actually with a live race and get an idea if you can find the on the winner. So that's something that we're looking forward to rolling out. And also, Steve, I'll just mention, I'm probably going to be doing demoing this on Twitch. I've already got the software downloaded, so I'm thinking Thursday afternoon will probably be the day that I just put a couple of minutes on there, kind of explaining a walkthrough, just to give a visual standpoint, because I know sometimes on the radio it's hard to visualize sure. some of these things, but I'll try to get on Twitch and just talk about it for a couple of minutes.
Nice. And we'll just give me the heads up and we'll direct people to it. And, you know, you mentioned that and you mentioned this innovation with the couple of free races so that people can get familiar, not asking anybody to pay for anything until they've got confidence that they understand what it is and how to use it. And also my friend Joe McKay, just answered Joe. Sent me a DM about the user guide, and I'll put that link up as well on Twitter, because there's a multi page guide that walks you through everything. I do want to mention that it occurs to me, there's the international side of things too. For those that want to look at Australasia, there's a whole we're looking at North America, but you do have the option, to switch over and look at the races from Hong Kong and from Australia. And, for those of you that are, looking at things that are, less familiar. So you do have that option. You're not just limited to, this is not just North America.
Correct. Yes. See, we have all the Australian content and, Hong Kong also, and actually the Hong Kong Jockey Club was interested in possibly presenting this, giving access to their people that were on track to kind of analyze the races also. So there's definitely opportunities, and we just encourage people to try it out and give us feedback also. I mean, the great thing about this is we want feedback. We can build more into it. And that's always important is to hear from your clients and customers about what they think and how we can make it better. We're always open to doing that.
Any, you got a play for today at all?
Oh, Steve, haven't looked at anything today.
All right.
We'll see. Maybe tomorrow I'll text you or something if I find something at Tampa Gulfstream we're running tomorrow, but I didn't look at anything today.
All right. I'm just to show you how quickly you can pull something together. I'm just looking at parks later today and, the eighth race, 7,500, non-winners of four, lifetime. Wildcatten, the five on average, 15-1. There you go. let's see if an instant. I just picked a race just at random and has a clear edge on this field on form to win average. So. How about the five in the eighth race today, Wildcat and 15-1? We'll try that.
Yeah, best of luck, Steve. That should be fun. I'll have to watch that race.
Papo Morales, Papo Core 1, formtowin.com. Come download it, and we're gonna utilize it together and learn it together and win with it together. Thanks to Shug. Had an unbelievable 45 minutes with Shug this morning. Doug O'Neill, Andy Serling. Gary Falter, 2 o'clock today. Register for the owner conference. Nick Luck about our situation we're following with Gordon Elliott. And Papo Morales just now. Good luck today, everybody. Back tomorrow, Wednesday. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, and much, much more. Talk to you then.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.